Hi. I'm not sure I can hear you at the moment. See sound. Huh. Oh, I know what to do. One second.
So
Second.
I see. Can you hear me?
I think I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes. And I see that you have a beautiful mic, but I need you to record on your phone.
I am recording on my phone.
Okay. You
Okay.
need to hold your phone like this,
Okay.
or to put the so it's so that it's going. Your voice is like floating over the top of the mic here.
Okay.
So not like this, but
Like this.
either like this or
Okay.
like this, so that your the voice is going over the top of it, as opposed to
Okay.
like this. Yeah, just not horizontal, but just like you want the voice to float over the top of the mic.
Okay.
All right, cool. And then do you have the voice, you have the voice memo going?
I have the voice memo going right now. Yes. Yes.
Oh, cool. All right. So thanks so much for doing this. I'm gonna record me. Sorry.
No worries.
Okay, can you do me a favor and say your name, where you work, what you do, and where you're at right now?
My name is Carlos Mariscan. I work at the University of Nevada, Reno. I am a philosopher of science, focusing on issues in the life sciences, including origins of life, what life is, life in the universe, that kind of thing. And I am presently in Reno in my home, just socially distancing.
Great. Are you still teaching, or is class suspended? What's going on? Or were you teaching this semester, or?
I am still teaching. So I have some of my lectures now have been recorded as videos and are uploaded to the internet. And for other classes, I'm chatting with students about once a week about readings. Yeah.
Great. So we're doing an episode about viruses, and I heard you speaking with Carl Zimmer about this topic, and so I thought it would be perfect to reach out to you given what you study and your expertise. Because as long as I can remember, I mean, even when I was like a grade school kid and we were learning about viruses, I was like, how can something that kills its host where it lives be alive? Because you were supposed to have this drive to keep on living if you are alive. And it seemed to me at a young age that viruses didn't have that. How accurate or inaccurate is that thinking, according to you?
I mean, I think there's a lot of threads that I would pull out of that line of thinking. One is that a lot of viruses actually sometimes evolve to be less virulent. I mean, it depends on the particular dynamics, right? So there's instances where viruses have been introduced to try to destroy entire populations, like the rabbits in Australia, and in fact, the virus evolved to be less deadly so that it could maintain its existence in the rabbits in Australia.
Yeah, I think Carl Zimmer called it like benevolent viruses. Like he actually used that phrase in his book.
I see. I mean, viruses get a bad rap. They're responsible for the vast majority of genetic difference in this planet, and we still know very little about them. They're very fascinating.
Yeah, and I was speaking with a researcher earlier today, deals in fossils, and I think, and Carl also reported this in his book. It's some remarkably high number of our genome is viruses, and you can find them going back millions of years or whatever. So they certainly are live up to their names. You know, they go viral. They're prolific around eons and themes that we cannot live without them. That they are part of us, and you know they're responsible in some ways for our evolution.
They are a central player in the role of our evolution. That's certainly true. I think, you know, the estimates are going to vary widely because we have very bad ways of figuring this out. But, you know, they outnumber us by many, many what we would say orders of magnitude, right? So there's many, many, many more of them than there are of us. And just by the numbers, they probably have innovated more genes than us living creatures. And some of them have put those genes in living creatures, which means that they've had an influence on our evolutionary trajectory. And yeah, they've been around for billions of years, we think. We don't quite know where they came from. There's still some viable hypotheses out there that are radically different from whether they escaped from cells or whether they're reduced cells themselves or any number of other things.
So I think I know the answer, but I will ask you, are viruses
alive? I love that question because it's the kind of question that I think sounds like it makes sense, right? Like, are viruses alive? And I don't think that I think viruses reveal how problematic our notions of life and death have always been. And I have an analogy here to the notion of death itself, right? So 200 years ago, if you poked somebody and they weren't moving, they were dead. And then we invented iron lungs and we invented dialysis machines. And those kept people alive, even if various parts of their bodies stopped working. And I think it's what that analogy reveals is that our notion of death had a lot wrapped into it that didn't come apart in nature. And it's the same with our notion of life. It's a very complex muddle of ideas that for most daily purposes don't actually come into conflict, right? The difference between a rabbit and a rock is huge. But viruses show that there's actually a middle ground there that under some definitions of life, they get to count, and under other definitions, they don't. And I think that it's just a decision for us which definitions we like best. If we were being truly objective and scientific, we might just describe the features that they have that they share with living creatures, which are a lot, but they also lack a lot of features that the rest of the living world has.
So.
I guess when you think about what counts as alive, a rabbit counts as alive and a rock doesn't. And you think that... Good question. I think it would be majority, right? Either the public or the scientific majority would say rocks don't get to count as alive, at least not in any interesting sense. And you know, it's my job as a philosopher to spell out what that interesting sense is. And I think that there's lots of things that are interesting about rocks. It's not the same kinds of things that are interesting about, rabbits or humans. But there are some things that they share that might be worth studying in common and other things that they don't.
Is to be alive is evolving.
Right, yeah.
And so are viruses all the time.
Right, good. Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think, viruses are evolving in the sense that they keep changing to fit their environment. and our concepts evolve in the same sense, right? That we had concepts that worked for most of our experience in history or in our own personal histories. And then we encounter new situations or consider new problems. And those concepts have to change as well to fit those new circumstances. So I think that it's a strong analogy, the cultural evolution versus viral evolution.
I know that because of COVID-19 and this coronavirus that has taken down the world at this point, across much of the world, that many people hate this virus.
Sure.
And I just, you know, as a philosopher, maybe you can appreciate this notion I have of wanting to sort of think like the virus, or what is the virus trying to achieve here? Like, maybe we should, I don't know.
Yeah.
So maybe we shouldn't eat it, what are the goals of the virus? Is it trying to kill people, or is it trying to replicate? I mean, I know it doesn't have a brain, it only has like 13 parts of it or something.
Sure.
Or something, so. I don't know. What can you make of that? Quite a messy question there for you.
No, I think there's a brilliant insight there. I saw on the internet recently this poster advertising people protesting the lockdown measures, right? And it said, "Come join, let's all congregate." And somebody made the joke of whether that was written by the virus itself, right? Because it would be advancing the virus's goals for all of us to go out and intermingle and interact. And I think talking in terms of goals is one of this, it's a bane of human conversation. We're goal-oriented creatures, so we talk in goal terms. And natural selection, I think, sometimes mimics this goal-orientedness, right? To the point that when you ask people to model natural selection or to model rational choices, like rational choice theory in economics, you can use a lot of the same tools. I like to think about natural selection as guessing and checking over millions of years, or maybe millions of generations is the better version of it. And so you can sort of think about the virus as guessing and checking all of the possibilities over a long period of time. And so our goal, assuming that we don't want the virus to be everywhere all at once, is to limit the virus's ability to guess and check, to mutate, to reproduce, right? It's we think about it as an adversary, and it, to some extent, it is. But the reason it's an adversary is because it didn't evolve with us, right? So it jumped from some other creature, presumably bats, to humans. And as a result, most of the time when that happens, nothing happens, it fizzles out. But in this case, it just caught wildfire. So we haven't had a long enough time to co-evolve together so that we could be nice with each other.
I was thinking when you were saying that, you saw that post on Facebook or whatever, I was thinking of the cat virus. Like, isn't there a cat virus that sort of
right. Can
take over the brain of the human? I don't know.
Toxoplasmosis, you're thinking?
Right.
Yeah.
What is the name of it again?
Toxoplasmosis. Yes.
I wanted to get to the moral question.
Sure. Well, maybe I'll say a thing on toxoplasmosis, and then
sure.
It'll come back to you.
The virus is making me forget my question.
No worries. I mean, there are a variety of viruses and pathogens in general that operate by modifying their host's behavior. And the name is escaping me right now, but there's one that infects an ant that makes it go climb up to the highest point that it can so that it gets eaten by something else, so that it can prolong its life cycle. And I keep saying so that we use these goal-oriented terms, but it's just a really convoluted life cycle that is kind of ingenious. I mean, behavior is just another feature of organisms. And if behavior can get viruses or other pathogens to reproduce and to multiply, then they will take advantage of it, if at all possible.
I was talking with some friends, and I remember, this is what I was going to ask you, I remember now. I was talking with some friends. One friend said, this is the pangolin's revenge. And cool. I wanted to ask about the, you know, many border place some sort of moral lesson on top of what's happening to society right now. We saw the pictures of the Japanese markets,
sure.
Where live animals are, you know, treated in ways that to Westerners especially look horrific. Mm-hmm. And so there was some sort of, you know, always this payback. And I wondered as a philosopher what you think of that notion that humans have to always want to assign some sort of moral code to what's happening to us and how that might relate to the virus.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. I do think it's a natural tendency for us to think in terms of intentions, right? The goals, the intentions of objects. And there's a sense in which that story can be told in terms of how the virus or the meat markets or whatnot have particular goals, let's say, and we've interacted with them in terrible ways, and this is their response. But I think another way of describing that I think is probably more it assumes less agency would be that we had vulnerabilities. We set up a world in ways that left us vulnerable, and we weren't aware of those vulnerabilities until now. And we probably still have many more vulnerabilities. And these viruses, and other pathogens, bacteria, whatnot, they are perfectly willing to exploit any vulnerabilities. And the goal is to try to live as harmoniously as possible so that we don't have all of these concentrated vectors that would allow pathogens like these viruses to jump from other creatures to us. And you know, that's the China side of that. On our side, there were some vulnerabilities in our infrastructure, in our medical system, in our political system, that this virus has been able to just run through. When a toddler breaks some technology that you own, there's a goal of wanting to blame the toddler for doing something that caused you damage, right? You know, broke your computer or whatnot. But there's another sense in which it's our fault for leaving the technology unattended.
I think that applies also to people trying to live with partners in quarantine.
Yeah.
In New York City apartments.
Yeah, fair enough.
But yeah, I get your point. So that is everything that I had to ask you. I wonder if you had prepared anything else, or if there's anything else you want to add that I didn't ask you about.
I wanted to thank you for what you're doing. I I started listening to the most recent episode, and I'm subscribing. I think you do great work. I don't know if I have anything substantive to say, except that this episode has revealed some really dark sides of human society, but also some really good things. You know, like, we're all voluntarily staying indoors, or at least most of us are. And there are people that are working every day to try to make that possible. I was afraid of this virus in January. And the reason I was afraid of it was because I didn't think that people would voluntarily socially distance. And now that I know that we have that capability, it makes me wonder what else we could do to address any of these other concerns that we have from science and technology and the world, like climate change or any of the systemic issues that we have with life, healthcare, whatnot. There's a sense in which, you know, this is a tragedy, but there's a silver lining to this cloud.
All right. Well, I thank you so much for taking the time. Really lovely to hang out with you. If you could just now save your interview and send it off, you can put it in your Google Drive or if emails or texts, whatever way you have of getting it to me, that is cool.
Excellent. I'll get that to you right now. Thank you.
Great. And this is for next Friday's episode. Yay! This is so good. Thank you.
This was fun. Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, you'll come back on again.
Please let me. I love this. Yeah. We're actually debating doing one here. I started a monthly lecture series called Thought on Tap, and it was going great. We were building up steam and everybody loved it. We've had to shut it down because of this. And so we're thinking of just turning it into a podcast.
Yeah, I think that you're a natural.
Thank you.
All right. Well, have a great day. And thank you again, Carl. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You have a great day as well. Bye.